Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Dan Straver, Mike Blewett back with you on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Fantasy Sports Today, so glad to be along with you talking all things Super Bowl 53. Don't forget, you have George Kurtz sliding in at the top of the next hour, 10 o'clock, to take over for me. And then you'll have George and Mike and the whole cast and crew here at FNTSY bringing you the rest of the way through Saturday and Sunday morning, getting you ready for the quote-unquote big game. Mike, we're going to get to it a little later, but I don't know if we're going to have time in the segment. What's your favorite Super Bowl food? Like, do you do the big party, or are you somebody who just likes to watch on your own in a man cave?
Well, I would prefer to watch solo, but that's not a reality anymore because I have two little kids and I have a wife. So I just sort of go where the day takes me. The last few years, really since I've moved into my house, I've really just been here. But tomorrow, since I'm working, I'll be in Manhattan from 12 to 3.
Right.
And then I have to scoot out of there as quickly as I can. I might even, this is probably tough to say this on air, I might actually have to bail on the last 10 minutes of the show tomorrow to catch a train to get back at a reasonable time because of the way that the railroad is set up. I live in Long Island, New York. If I finish the show at 3, there's not another train for nearly an hour.
So weekend trains in New York are the worst.
So then I'm not getting back to town or my house until almost 5 o'clock. And that's a little too late for me. I need to settle in, have a wing or two, have an adult beverage, and then get ready for the game. So the other complication is that I'm only a mile away from my house where I'm going, so it's not a big travel day or anything like that. But when do we leave? Do we leave before kickoff to get the kids back to put them to bed, or do we wait till halftime, keep them up a little bit later? God bless Lady Gaga. I hope she knocks it out of the park, but I don't have to watch it.
Amazing. I don't know what we're doing. We haven't really made a plan. And as I said, I live up here in Patriots country, so not many Patriots fans inviting me over their house for the Super Bowl, knowing that I dislike them so much. So we'll see how the day goes. But
favorite food, we're going to get wings tomorrow. There's a place in town, and there's a couple of others. There's a couple of other outlets of it in Manhattan, a place called Croxley's. I'll give it a shout out. So excellent wings. So we're going to pick up a big pile of those. So I would say football specific food, I'm in. I don't know what else we're going to be making. My wife's a dietitian, so there's always some oddly healthy thing in the mix there. But I like to live it up on Super Bowl, take the day off the next day, do a couple of radio spots, and then just wallow in super post game coverage and interviews and everything.
Yep, and then the next day we turn our eyes towards the draft as we quickly turn that page.
You're going to hear a lot from me in the draft, that's for sure.
Yes, sir. Looking forward to Emery, who we had on last week. Hopefully hear more from him. Great Senior Bowl coverage. Great follow on Twitter, too. There are so many people who are pointing you to their website or pointing you to he writes, but also shares a ton on Twitter. So if you're just looking for some pieces of information, definitely check out Emery Hunt over there. We do have a caller on the line. We'll get to some Rams talk in the next hour. We'll touch on what the Rams need to do to win. We've touched on a bit already talking about the defense side of the ball against the Pats offense, and obviously vice versa for the Rams offense and the Pats D, but want to hone in on some of Mike's thoughts, my thoughts on that. But we get a caller on the line. Kenny from Philadelphia, a good friend of the radio program here. Kenny, how you doing on this Saturday morning?
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Mike. What's going on,
What's
fellas?
Up, buddy? How you doing?
Hey, man. Hey, Mike. If you want to get on, if you want to get into Dan's skin, just mention these two words: game script.
Oh, you gotta go there. You got, like, it's we. I haven't slept enough to deal with game script in prison, man. Like that's not cool. What's going on, man? How you been?
I can't complain. Well, actually, tomorrow I celebrate one of my friend's birthday, so we'll be in Atlantic City. So we'll be down there. And one, no, oh, one nice. Of the tables and wow. the sports book is going to be. It's definitely going to be a good day, huh?
That'll be fun. That'll be. It's yeah. a perfect way to spend it. You know, if you can get to a book and hang out and celebrate a birthday, that's a fun way to do it. What's your favorite wager that you're going to make on this game? You're going to throw a prop at me?
Well, yeah. Well, yeah, I know I told y'all last week I was on the Brady getting a sneak there, had that at good odds, but I'm actually going to pivot off of that, and I'm actually going to be betting down. I'm not making as many picks as I thought I was, but my main pick really is going to be the Devlin to get in the end zone at 13-1. That's going to be my main one.
Sure.
Other than that, I'm begging.
So Dane Martinez and I did a James Devlin prop bet for the AFC Championship game to score two touchdowns.
Yep.
We had it at 100-1. But yep. I was telling him the reason it probably won't happen is because Burke had his back. And yep. the only mistake that we made, I have no issues that we put money down on Devlin, is that we should have hedged and also put that Burkhead bet in. And
oh, that's a good idea.
The way I feel about – yeah, so think about that too if you want to get a Burkhead – prop in there. They obviously utilized him. He scored two touchdowns. Look, they ran 94 offensive plays last right. week. It's the most that any team ran on anybody else in the league this year. I don't think that's going to happen, but they could push it up to 75 plays,
right.
and that could lead to more carries. It's just they're not going to have the rushing success like they did against the Chiefs. So
right.
Burkhead for a touchdown prop, I like it.
Yeah, pretty much my prop bet's gonna run from the first score, the anytime touchdowns, the MVP, and I got a couple other exotic bets. Like I said, I think Brandon Cooks is a I'm a narrative person, so the revenge factor. So pretty much my bet on him is going to be that does he make a catch for over 29.5 yards? So. And you compare that, like I said last week, with like Goff's longest passing touchdown to kind of double up on the play or whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely going to put
the one thing I'll tell you, the one that I really like, and I said to Dan at the top of the show, the odds have come down dramatically on it because it's so popular. That I don't think the book said it properly to start, is successful two-point conversion.
Absolutely.
Some books it opened at +200. I'm seeing on mybookie.ag it's down to +140. So while you can't get the odds that you would have liked, you still have an edge there, plus money. Two of the last three, there was no successful one last year. The previous two, there was. And these two teams are going to coach aggressively, and it's likely that they will attempt several two-pointers throughout the game. I don't see this being a back-and-forth field goal, touchdown, a nice, neat score. It could be like we saw, 26-23 last week. We saw 37-31. There was two-pointers attempted, so we'll see. But
all
that's
right.
what I
And on the MVP front, now, I'm an after person, and I'm going to put a couple shekels on a Gronk at +5,000 here for the MVP. I know that's a long shot, and if the Patriots win, 9 times out of 10, Brady's going to get the MVP. But if the Rams win, I got to put some scrubs on Gurley here. If they have any chance of winning, he's going to be a part of it.
What any are chance. The odds on Gurley?
+1,600.
So 16-1, I'm okay with that because
I'm putting a couple of shekels on it.
Yeah, I think that's the way to do it. You spread it around. The MVP bets are. They're all long shots outside of the quarterback. The last non-offensive quarterback to win was Santonio Holmes back in the 2008 season. So we're talking
Hines Ward,
exactly
yep.
10 seasons ago. So we had Malcolm Smith win against Denver. We had Von Miller win against Carolina. So there's defensive room there. In fact, I really liked that Von Miller bet back then. That was 20-1, I remember. It went off mm-hmm. at. So with these kinds of bets, I think you know that you're taking a risk but let's put $20 down on it. We'll win a little bit of money to cover some of my other losses. I think that's the way to go about it. The Gronk narrative has gotten a little bit out of control for me. I think he could be used as a decoy, but at 50-1, it's 50-1. I didn't think James Devlin was going to score two touchdowns, but it was 100-1. Why not take a shot with the Patriots?
Last exotic one here is when this happened in the game, I want y'all to think about me here. Field goal hitting one of the uprights at plus 1,200. Now, when it happens in the game, when these kickers going to hit one of those uprights, y'all think of me, okay?
Y'all have a good one, man.
Enjoy the game, man.
Right, you too, Kenny. Appreciate the call. And it's going to be a great moment when that happens in the game and I put my head in my hands and my wife asks me what I'm thinking about. And I say, oh, you know, Kenny from Philadelphia. That's what I'm thinking about. Yeah. Oh, Kenny. Good call, as always. Appreciate it. The prop bets, we'll get to
it. That's not a great. It's not a great thing for him to watch tomorrow. I know
he's a
Saints
fan,
but he's a big
living
Saints
in Philly. Yeah, exactly. I will say, the way Goodell has handled the Saints issue, which should have just been an apology once the game's over. Hey, referee and our line judges and our officials are all human. They missed the call. Flow of the game, they missed it. Nothing we can do about it now. Apologize to Saints fans, but go get him next year. And it's over. Instead, he does what he always does, where he tried to hide. And I don't get it. I don't get it from a PR perspective. I don't get it from a management perspective. But hopefully Saints fans can move forward a little bit.
Commissioner and his advisors have continuously botched his
amazing
PR time and time again. It's not everything is Goodell's fault.
No.
But he's got the people around him that put him in bad positions. He's obviously had the owners put him in bad positions as well. Patriots fans will forever want his head on a stake because of Deflategate, but you can't convince me that it was him. It was owners telling him that something needed to be done, and he exacted his – and they got their pound of flesh out of it. Which ironically helped the Patriots to win the Super Bowl that year because Brady was four games fresher as he approached 40 years old. So I don't even want to hear the Pats fans complain about it anymore. So
yeah, it's
I just think he's put in a bad position by himself, by his team, by other owners.
Well, and you forget that, and I think it's easy to forget that commissioners are the employee of the owners a lot. Like, it's not that they are there to run the league per se, but in most leagues, they are put there by the owners to oversee the league. And so when it comes to how everything works out, it's because of Jerry Jones says, hey, we have to do something.
That's it.
Point blank.
It's as simple as that. And when Jerry Jones starts shooting his mouth off and getting involved in the compensation committee, he has the right to do it because he owns 3% of the league. Roger doesn't own anything. He just gets paid really handsomely to deal with all these bullets that he's had to deal with.
All right, let's touch on anything else on from the Patriots side of the ball for you. Anybody who do you think is going to have a big game? I guess is talking about player prop bets and the way forward for the Pats.
Yeah, I'm going to take the White and Edelman overs. Yep. That's really where I'd be focused on. I feel like those are your best bets there. You know, doing some fun things like what Kenny from Philly is doing with Gronk. I think that's fun. Knock yourself out. I had fun with James Devlin last week. But the one guy that I'm really struggling to figure out what kind of game he's going to have is Sony Michel.
Yes, sir.
Because they have been really good at running the ball. I just don't know if it's as big a part of the game plan this week. To some extent, they can game plan similarly than they did against the Chiefs in order to keep Gurley and Goff and Cooks and crew off the field. But conversely, the Rams aren't as bad against the run, and they might be able to get more third down stops than the Chiefs got. So it may not be a carbon copy, which has me struggling to figure out which way to go on Michelle.
Yeah, I think that's a great point overall about how this offense runs. I'm big on White and Edelman, too. I think that's the players you're going to see the crossing routes over and over and over again. I think you're going to get probably upwards of 25 targets between the two of them I think that's honestly.
It's funny. I said that exact number.
Oh, did you?
On a show yesterday. I said I think you'll see a combined 25 or more targets for White and Edelman.
It's just funny to see how this offense works, and we can all see it. It's all crossing routes, and then they take the deep shot, you know, and then they take that one or two deep shots. So, you know, does Hogan or a Patterson have upside for longest reception? Yeah. You know, like, or for their individual longest receptions, I think they're both at like 19.5 or 20.5 respectively. I think those are live. It's just you're that's literally a dart throw.
To paint a picture too of how good the Patriots are at some of this intermediate passing, I had Davis Maddock on the FST podcast earlier this week. You can go to my Twitter timeline in order to find it at Mike Blewett. So. Brady, now think of it in context of how when they played the Chiefs, the screen going from left to right. Brady at the top of the screen, so that's Edelman, Gronk, and others coming across the middle, right to left, and the top left of your screen when you're going to the top right of your screen when you're going left to right. He consistently was hitting passes there. Brady's passer rating in that quadrant of the field between 10 and 20 yards on the him throwing to his left is 143.
Jeez.
That's how good they are there. They scheme guys open for him to make easy throws. He does not push the ball downfield as well as he did back in the day, and not nearly as good as many other quarterbacks in the league, but they don't make him do it. He throws behind the line of scrimmage. He throws open to Hogan, Gronk, and Edelman coming across from right to left. They're open all the time.
Yep. That makes total sense. And watch for the pick play. The Pats have really become one of the best teams in the NFL at that play. The three-step hook from a slot receiver getting in the way of defensive back on that crossing pattern when it's man-to-man, and that's how they free some guys up. And this isn't, you know, the Pats – every team does this, and the NFL really does need to clean up that sort of ruling, but they do it the best. Like, I watch them week in, week out. They just are so fine with that play that it opens up a ton of space over the middle when man-to-man coverage is there, especially when you have a White or a Burkett coming out of the backfield. Your linebacker's clear. All of a sudden, it's free space for Brady to operate in to anybody crossing across the field. We have plenty still to get to here over the final 40 minutes. For me, we have Fantasy Sports A until 11 a.m. George Kurtz will fill in. Still have to talk Rams. Want to talk a bit more about prop bets and get into a little bit of the entertainment angle if we have time. But we'll be back on the other side of this break. Dan Straffer, Mike Blewett, right here on Fantasy Sports Day. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, FNTSY.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Get 50% off at DailyRoto.com elite monthly membership if you sign up before Super Bowl 53 kickoff. The features: access to premium fantasy content for all sports, NFL, NBA, MLB, golf, NHL, premium lineup optimizer for FanDuel and DraftKings. That's for NFL, NBA, MLB, and golf. Access to betting tools, player props, and more. Customizable fantasy projections and rankings for FanDuel and DraftKings. Professional commentary via premium podcasts. Written fantasy content and slate breakdowns. FanDuel and DraftKings ownership projections for NFL only. DFS strategy guides, research tools, and lineup alerts. Just enter promo code SB53 to get your 50% off a DailyRoto.com elite monthly membership and cash in on your prop against the spreads and totals wagers on the big game. That's promo code SB53. Now, Mike, want to turn our attention to the LA Rams. Always a team that I want to say St. Louis, much like I want to say the San Diego Chargers still. I will probably do that for a long, long time here. But can the Patriots beat two LA teams in one season? One playoff season. That'll be fun to check out. But the great Evan Silva has his big game breakdown over at Roto-World for fantasy owners. I think NFL fans alike. He is a must read. And he has this note in the section about the Rams backfield, Mike, that I want to read. And I'm going to quote directly here and get your take on it. And you've said as much already. The Rams need to get Gurley going, especially in the passing game. Patriots middle linebacker Kyle Van Noy and Deonta Hightower have combined to allow 13 to 19 playoff targets for 131 yards and 3 touchdowns, including Damian Williams, two AFC title game scores, whereas New England held running backs to 55 carries, 167 yards, and 2 touchdowns. That's 3.04 yards per carry, rushing over its last 4 games. So this is a defense, and again, you have to worry about who they're playing against, whether the running game was going or and not. But do you believe that the way forward and the way to winning is with Turd Gurley? Wow. Todd Gurley in space. Through via the pass game.
You need to know about it.
Exactly. There it is.
Which might be a turd strategy for the Rams. Look, the New England linebackers are not as athletic as Gurley. They have Kyle Van Noy's good, really good player, and got Hightower out there, obviously, but that's just a difficult matchup for anybody when Gurley is healthy. Now, I can't say that the Rams are flat out lying, but I don't think he's 100% healthy.
Right.
So nobody's listed as questionable or doubtful or out for this whole game on either roster. But I do have doubts about how effective Gurley can be and if he's not been 100%. Maybe it's not like they were holding him back, but saving him for the Super Bowl. They couldn't have done that. They were in a dogfight against the Saints, and they obviously clearly could have lost that quite easily. So there isn't any reason to hold him back there. Granted, they got down 13-0, but the Rams aren't a panic-type team. 13-0 isn't a big deal when you have their type of offense. So Gurley could have been used more liberally throughout the game. I just don't know why he wasn't. And I don't know why he was underutilized against Dallas. I just assumed back at the Dallas game that maybe he's not 100%. C.J. Anderson's giving him a rest. And he'll be back in full force against New Orleans, and he wasn't. So, but yes, that is how they will win. It'll be Gurley having a huge game, especially in the passing game.
It would be a bad game plan, a turd game plan, to not use Gurley here. So I think that is the right summation. I'm with you. I will couch it exactly the same way you did, that I don't believe the Rams are lying in any way, but it does feel as though we're not getting all of the information, that we're not getting all the pieces here about what's going on with Gurley. Now, he came out after the championship game and said, I'm not hurt. I just had a sorry game. That was his quote. I just played poorly. You take him at his word, right? You take what he says and you believe it. You have to hope, if you are wagering on the Rams or if you're a Rams fan, that he is as close to 100% as he can be coming into this one to really make a push against what will be a dynamic Patriots defense. And by dynamic, I mean changing, that they're going to throw so many different looks at the Rams and at McVay and at Goff to just try to confuse him, to try to get him into situations where he doesn't know what he's actually looking at. Zone reads versus man-to-man versus 5 DBs, and they've even run 6 DBs out there from time to time. And that's where the Pats really excel, is if they can get ahead, and you said, get ahead, say 13-0 or 13-3, the Patriots are going to run a lot of defensive backs out there. They're going to try to force the hand to make Gurley run a lot. And keep the ball in front of them and not let Goff beat them. So that's really an intriguing idea. And I think part of my, if I'm running the Rams, and obviously I'm not, I'm sitting in front of a microphone, so I get to talk about it. But I think that the Rams really need to take the ball if they win the toss. I think the Rams need to be on the field with that offense in the first quarter trying to put points up first. And I think it's just a mental aspect of this game and what the Patriots can deploy on defense will change whether or not they're up. And I think that'll play a lot into how this all schemes out. What's your take, Mike, on other offensive pieces? Obviously, we know Goff is good enough. We know McVay is very good at pre-snap reads and communication to neutral field. So they should be able to communicate fairly well. There are going to be Pats fans there, obviously, but they should be able to communicate fairly well pre-snap. What do you make of the rest of the offense? Who do you see as pieces that need to be present and accounted for from a Patriots defense perspective?
One thing on the coin flip before I comment on that, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer to it.
Sure.
But I will say that there is the one risk, and the reason that the Patriots defer all the time is because they're getting the ball in the second half. And if there's, you can criticize Tom Brady. You could try to criticize Tom Brady for a lot of things, but the one thing that he's absolutely impeccable at is scoring in the last 2 minutes of the first half. And it has always been an advantage for the Patriots in deferring because they get the ball in the second half because they know not only is Brady going to drive the ball down the field and probably score a touchdown at the end of the first half, but they're going to take it out of the locker room in the second half and score again. So not only have they conceivably bracketed two touchdowns around halftime, but your offense has been off the field in real time for probably 45 minutes. And it's an advantage that they try to exact all the time. So keep that in mind. Rams choose to take the ball at kickoff, it does afford the Patriots that opportunity to do something that they feel very comfortable in doing. So that's the only thing I would say about the coin flip. So as far as the rain, the one thing I would say about Gurley, I think Evan Silva does a really good job of stating that. McVay insists he's 100%. He has practiced in full for a month and that he does expect Gurley's role to be restored. They said he didn't play as much because he had a couple of early drops and a blown blitz pickup against the Saints. So I suppose you have to trust that. The one good stat he has here, Patriots middle linebackers Kyle Van Noy and weak side linebacker Dante Hightower have combined to allow 13 of 19 playoff targets. So that's 68% for 131 yards and 3 touchdowns. So Damian Williams obviously had success there. It's just that you also mentioned, not countering that in any way, I think Gurley could have a really good game and have them lose because we saw it with Damian Williams. We saw it with other running backs against the Patriots in the past. I just feel that Gurley could have an elite level type of game. But what the Pats would prefer is death by paper cut. If they're going to lose, they're okay with Goff going methodically down the field. If Goff, who is actually pretty good at pushing the ball down the field statistically, if he's hitting big plays for Cooks, the Pats feel like they're going to lose.
That makes sense. And I think I forget who it was during the middle of the season made a big point about for a team like the Rams, if Todd Gurley's having a big game on the ground, it probably means they're not scoring as much. Right? Like, yes, there's if they're up huge and Gurley's running in the second half and puts up over 100 yards, there's that narrative to get to. But if Gurley's the focus of an offense, it means you're keeping them out of the end zone a little bit more because they're not scoring at a high clip. They're not scoring, at a fast pace. So that is a way to try to slow them down. Put five DBs, put six DBs out there and see what you can do.
And they've been in these high scoring games before. And I think they feel comfortable when they're the team scoring 30 points and not the opponent. So they beat the Falcons when the Falcons came up short and only scored 28 points. They lost the Super Bowl to Philly because they gave up 41 points when they had scored 33. They beat the Seahawks 28-24. And the Seahawks were a running team, right? If there was more explosive plays in that game outside of the wacky Jermaine Curse one, maybe Seattle wins it. So they obviously feel really comfortable keeping their opponents under 30 and allowing some more rushes is probably a way in which they can do that. So as far as other players are concerned, the reason that I'm picking the Patriots is because as good as the Rams are, and I absolutely think they have a chance, the passing game has not been as efficient with Cooper Kupp out. It just hasn't been.
Yes, sir.
I thought Josh Reynolds would be a bigger part of things. I thought he'd be more successful, but he just hasn't been. I think, and I've heard a few people throw this theory out. Davis Maddock actually did it on the FST podcast a couple days ago. He expects more 12 personnel to be run so that Higbee and particularly Everett will, and this is the chess match that we'll see between McVay and Belichick, right? They run 11 personnel at a 95% clip, so that's one running back, one tight end, three wide. They run it more than any team in the league. They run it at a historic pace. But maybe they switch it up, go to two tight ends, have Gurley back there, and are creating opportunities for Everett over the middle of the field and Gurley in space. That would be unique to me. Davis isn't the only one I've heard say it, and I think that's something to keep an eye on, to keep the Patriots on their toes.
That's a great, and Evan makes the same point. I know Evan and Davis talk a lot, so I wouldn't be surprised if they had a conversation around this one. They do a great podcast each week on another provider for the NFL. Evan specifically says that if the Rams get away from their typical three receiver reliance, go to two tight end sets, that brings a Landon Roberts back onto the field for the Pats. It makes them go to their base 4-3 back to the linebackers because they have to cover over the middle of the field, and he's not good in coverage. So that could really open things up for Everett and Higbee. So right in the same vein, right in the same school of thought, thinking that there may be, and I think, if I remember the stat, the Rams ran their offense the most out of that base set than any other team. Like, one setup at the offensive line, one set formation is 90% of their plays. It's just that they run variations on that offense from that set. So for the Rams to get away from that set would be a big change, would be a big change for McVay and for Goff, and to make a big difference here in how they approach it. But you use the word I was going to use, or two words, I guess. It's a chess match. These are two very smart, or at least we believe them to be very smart head coaches, guys who have proven that they can figure things out. Belichick a little bit more methodical, McVay a little bit more on the fly, it would seem, when it comes to checkdowns and figuring out defensive schemes and calling in audibles to his quarterback. But that's going to be the fun part. If you are a football fan, right? Like, you're not just watching the Super Bowl because it's the Super Bowl. You are a football fan who's sitting down to watch two of the best teams in the NFL and two of the best head coaches. Then you're going to get that chess match. And that's going to be fun to watch and see how they play and see how it works out. And that's where I think the prop bets about scoring become interesting, Mike, where you have the first half score over under, you have the first quarter, you have the second quarter, and that's where I get intrigued, because I think this is going to be a slow moving game to start. Many Patriots games are, you know, a lot, you know, they don't score a ton in the second quarter, we know that, and there are pieces where over the years they've struggled in the first half of games. Obviously you can point to, you know, the Super Bowl against the Falcons and the comeback and all that, but I do find it intriguing to look at those numbers and see if there's something to exploit in the first half prop or the first quarter, second quarter prop. I don't think we're going to see a ton of scoring in the first couple of frames of this game, simply as these two coaches try to feel each other out and figure out exactly what the other is doing. Would you agree, or do you see this sort of this candle being lit from opening kickoff?
That wouldn't stun me if it was a little bit of a chess match at the beginning with the defenses holding firm on third down. Pats have been really good on third down offensively, but it wouldn't surprise me if that was, you know, throughout the Super Bowl week, the NFL Network runs those half-hour vignettes, those half-hour shows of previous Super Bowls. It's like a nice, easy 22-minute recap, and you can go back and watch it. And it shows all the highlight plays. And one of the ones that I watched was the Pats against the Panthers. And that was a really wild game because that did not feature any score until 27, almost 27 minutes into the game, like 26:55 into the game. So it was scoreless. The longest scoreless streak to open a Super Bowl was in that game. But in the last 3 minutes of the first half, there was 24 points scored.
Right.
So it's 14-10 at halftime. Then, and the announcers are like, man, what a wild couple of minutes that was. Then, fast forward to the third quarter after, and that was the Janet Jackson halftime show, by the way.
Yep.
So after that halftime show, which basically changed television forever, the
and Janet Jackson's career, for that matter.
Yeah. Third quarter, no scores. No scores in that third quarter. So 24 points in 3 minutes, no scores in the first, no scores in the third. And then the fourth quarter, a 19-18 wild, wacky, big play bonanza. It started right at the beginning of it, and you had the long Mushima Muhammad touchdown. You had earlier, you had a long Steve Smith touchdown. You had several missed two-point conversions by the Panthers, which honestly, if they just played that game straight up and not gone for two, that game ends regulation tied 31-31. Go back, look it up. I don't have the time to walk you all through it. But Fox went for two earlier than he probably should have, and it led to the walk-off kick by Vinatieri. But could it play out like that? That game still ended up 32-29. That'd be over tomorrow. So, yeah, it could be a long time for anybody scores or gets into it. Could be a lower-scoring first half and still end up in a 60-point range.
Yeah, we've seen some crazy points put up. Plenty to get to in the final 20 minutes for me, but still, stay tuned all the way through 11 o'clock. George Kurtz sliding into the chair to co-host with Mike Blewett, and you'll have them rest of the day. Then you have Mike again tomorrow from 12 to 3. Plenty going on here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, heading up to Super Bowl 53. Stay tuned. Fantasy Sports Day right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
Dan Strafford, Mike Blewett here, leading up to the top of the hour. George Kurtz sliding in here on Fantasy Sports Day till 11 a.m. Special thanks to Sean Engel, as always, behind the glass on the ones and twos, bringing us in and out of every break with some of the best music each and every weekend. Appreciate that. Mike and I are with you each and every Saturday on Fantasy Sports Today. Also hear me Monday through Friday, 7:30 to 8 o'clock on the Fantasy Sports News Desk. Hear Mike throughout the week on a variety of shows. And as he said earlier, you'll hear from him tomorrow, 12 to 3, leading up to Super Bowl coverage. All right, we've made it through an hour and 40 minutes talking Super Bowl. Want to talk a little bit about the Rams, then get your final take on some of these prop bets. I know you and George will continue the conversation in the next hour as well. What do you think here from a defensive perspective? We've talked James White. We've talked Edelman. We've talked a little bit about the Gronkowski narrative. We know Brady likes to get rid of the ball quick. Does it all come down to the defensive line for you? Does it all come down to getting the pressure on Brady that matters? Or do you think the secondary will play a bigger part than maybe some analysts are starting to give them due?
I think that's a fair question. I think they're going to try and counteract the pressure that they know is coming by getting it to White and Edelman as quickly as possible. So to that end, whomever is going to be matched up on Edelman is going to have to be really good. And Davis Maddock actually detailed this the other day. Eric Berry's at the end of the road, and he missed some plays against Edelman that probably could have been made defensively. The Rams have a better defensive backfield, obviously, even with Marcus Peters being really bad this year. The Rams have a better defensive backfield than do the Chiefs. So I think there's some plays that could be made there. And I think who's ever on Edelman is going to have to try to limit Edelman. It's tough because he makes catches in tight spaces. He's usually wide open, but he can make catches in tight spaces too, and as we saw in the final drive against the Chiefs last week, or 2 weeks ago. But so I think, yes, Aqib Talib has been excellent this year. Nickell Robey-Coleman has been excellent. I was sort of facetiously saying Brady's going to get in his face. So, well, he's got to score on him first, and Robey-Coleman's been really good. But I think he'll make a point of it at some point during the game. Reality is, yes, the defensive backfield will matter, but the Pats are going to have to get rid of the ball quickly to Edelman and White. I think that's just a plan of attack. I try not to overthink it. That seems to be the most right down Broadway way that they like to play offense that way. And thankfully it has some benefits when you're playing against the Rams.
It's going to be a fun one to track. That is for sure. This game, I said the chess match will be what I'm watching, I think, early. I think that this Rams defense will come to play, and you get on that front line, Aaron Donald, obviously, Aaron Donald with the name, with the flashiest of names, what he had 20.5 sacks on the year, an absolutely dominant season on that front line. But, you know, there's a guy there who has been cast as the villain many times over in the NFL, somebody who has been rightly put into that characterization, stepping on players, you know, stepping on hands, stepping on face masks, hitting when he should not on the defensive line. But and Ndamukong Suh here could be a difference maker and could sort of right that ship. You want to talk narratives? This is a guy who's been around the NFL, you know, multiple different teams, had almost become an afterthought simply because of the quote unquote baggage he brought with him. But here he is, Mike.
Guys.
Yeah, he's on the precipice here. This seems like a spot for him to shine. Of the defensive players for the Rams, if you had to choose one for MVP, who would be the guy you think has enough influence on this contest to pick up the hardware at the end of the game?
Well, I did mention the Grady Jarrett thing from a couple of years ago. So if Aaron Donald ends up having that kind of game where he's putting up multiple sacks and the Rams win, I think you have an opportunity for a defensive player. The problem is James White had a monster game against Atlanta, and they still gave it to Brady, even right when Brady wasn't at his best. So it just so often goes to the QB now that I feel like Gurley's going to have that monster game, and they may still give it to Goff if Goff plays, you know, clean football. So that's where it gets tough for me. But I think if you want to spread it around, the Gronk narrative, to me, we just heard a caller in the last hour, Kenny from Philly. He's on that Gronk bandwagon as far as Gronk winning the MVP. Where are the odds right now? Gronk is 5-1 right now, plus 5,000 on FanDuel Sportsbook. So Gurley's at 16-1. I'm okay with that. I think because he'd have to have the monster game. I think the Pats will try to limit Brandon Cooks. So if you're looking at like MVP candidates for me on the Rams, it's Goff, Gurley, Donald. I guess you could throw a whole bunch of cash on Marcus Peters, because if he does get lucky, it's 100-1. So
yeah, if he runs into two interceptions,
yeah, I don't think he will at all. But I'll throw $20 on it.
Well, and you made mention before, maybe we can take a second here to talk about it, and not expecting to break the entire idea of hedging down in the next 10 minutes or so. But you make mention of last week or 2 weeks ago, I should say, the Devlin prop bet you went after with Dane, who obviously people should know from a variety of shows here on the network. But you went after that, and you regret that you didn't hedge on the other side. So quickly here, what did you mean by that? Somebody who's listening who may be, you know, living in a state like New Jersey where sports betting is new or hasn't bet and wants to bet on the Super Bowl, what exactly would be your approach to specific bets on hedging and maybe getting after odds that are a little bit longer, like a Marcus Peters, just to see what happens?
Yeah, so the reality with the Devlin bet, to explain that, it was a ridiculous bet in that it was he had to score two touchdowns to come in at 100-1. So Dane and I put collectively $50 down on it, but we were going to win $5,000 if that came through. But I did say to him, I don't think this will happen because Burkhead is back. I should have gone a step further and said, I'll do this if we also put money on Burkhead, who was at 27-1. So I was really just hedging against my narrative. Now, I didn't think Burkhead would score two touchdowns either, and he did. He won the game on the final touchdown. So that's one type of hedge. A true hedge, though, is somebody like me that has a bunch of money on Pat's futures. I have some at 5-1 plus 500. I have some at 4-1 plus 400. So I have money. I want to be financially compensated if the Patriots win. That's my approach, Dan. That is the ultimate hedge.
I am right
there with
you.
I think they're going to win. And I thought at the start, at the onset of the playoffs, I thought the Pats would lose to the Saints.
Sure.
Now that the Saints are out, I think the Pats are going to win. But the value bet at the onset of the playoffs at plus 500 and then plus 400 after they beat the Chargers was on the Patriots because the path lined up nicely for them. I liked their path to the Super Bowl. I did think they'd beat the Chiefs 2 weeks before they played the Chiefs. I thought they were going to play the Chiefs and then win. It worked out. Doesn't always work out. But the ultimate hedge for me would be to bet the Rams now, get some value out of the 2.5 points, and hedge back against my futures bets.
Yep.
And make sure I know I'm going to win. Now, I don't want to do the math on air, but I can hedge back and figure out what I need to bet to come out on top, because I'm going to make 5 times my money that I have with the Pats. But if I come back the other way and cover those bets with the Rams, then I know I can win money either way.
Right.
I'm just not winning as much as I could if I let it ride with the Pats. I think I'm going to let it ride. I don't think I'm going to hedge back with the Rams because I still think the Pats are going to win. Evan Silva, who I respect a lot, he does excellent breakdowns. He has the Rams by one in a 24-23 game, so he expects it to be a little bit lower scoring. It wouldn't surprise me if it goes under. The totals in Vegas are so sharp at this time of year that the total is almost a tough bet for me when it's that high. I think I'm going to end up picking it over, but it's right on the number. Like, I think this could be 30-27 Pats. I might throw a funkier score in there to allow for some 2-point conversions, but the totals are really sharp. To give you a sense of how sharp Vegas gets at this time of year with player props and totals,
yep.
In the NFC Championship game, the pass attempts for Goff and Breeze were identical at 36.5 going into the game. How many pass attempts do you think they'll have? At the end of regulation, both quarterbacks had thrown the ball 36 times. Right on the number. Amazing. They're building new buildings out there every day, Dan. So
they know
what they're doing. I think you're just trying to extract some value out of plus money bets, meaning the not long shots, but longer shots. You know, if you're trying to bet Tom Brady, I'll give you an example. If you're trying to bet Tom Brady to win the MVP, you have to put down $100 to win $115. There's not a lot of value there.
Yep.
You want to put it down on Gurley, you got it 16-year plus $1,600. You put down $100, you win $1,600. There's value there. James White appears unlikely to ever win an MVP because he did what he did against Atlanta and still didn't win it. But
yeah.
If you think he's going to have the 15-catch game again, throw a couple of touchdowns on him, he's at plus 2,500. So it doesn't mean you have to bet $100. You can put $20 down. Just spread it around a little bit. But, you know, you're going to need a little bit of luck for it to be somebody other than a quarterback. The Aaron Donald thing is interesting. That's a little bit of a breakdown. I hope I didn't ramble too much. I just wanted to give people an explanation. Regarding hedging.
I think it's great perspective, Mike. And I think further, you make the point of, in the end, we wager, we play DFS to make money. And when you start to hedge, you have to do the math of, well, am I just coming out even in the end? Am I actually spending more money to make less money? Hedging too far? Am I going too in? And I think it's a great point. We were talking to Drew before in North Carolina. I believe that was his name. About playing DFS. It's the same thing. Playing multiple lineups is great to cover off on more bases, but are you now sinking to a dollar value where you're not going to even make back if you win playing cash games? So you just got to understand bankroll management, how you're going about understanding how much money you might make, and then the hedging side of it. I think, Mike, also you make a great point about the futures bets you already have. So it's sort of the, you know, what's in your pocket and what you might bet new. When you're betting new to begin with, hedging can become a little bit messier. But I will say this. when it comes to wagering, I don't wager a ton. You know, the season I've done with this show and with the obviously loosening of regulations in this country, I've done a bit more than I have in the past. But the emotional hedge has been where I focused. I'm rooting for Team X. I'm going to bet on Team Y. You know, so I can enjoy the win if Team X wins. And Team Y, if they win, hey, I'm covered. I'm covered that, yeah. I made some money. I made a little bit of cash, and that's the path for me. As a Jets fan, living in New England, living in Massachusetts, that is where I've been all along. That if the Pats win, I want to at least win some money off of it. I want to be able to recoup some of that emotional loss.
You know, it's a fun one, and this is hard to do, but what's a fun one on FanDuel Sportsbook, you get both to score a touchdown, so a two-player combo. If you think that Sony Michel and Robert Woods will score a touchdown, right, it's plus 275. Julian Edelman and Robert Woods is plus 350. I think an interesting one. Let me see the Gronk ones. I do believe that Gronk, they'll try and get Gronk in the end zone. But Gronk and Brandon Cooks, that's plus 375.
Yep.
Gronk and James White, that's an interesting one. That's plus 500. You think White will score a touchdown and Gronk will score a touchdown? Put 50 bucks down. You win 250. I like it. 5-1. That's probably my favorite combo.
I like that one. The other thing we didn't get to talk to, and maybe you and George can take it up in the next hour or, you know, sometime across today and tomorrow, is the cross sports prop bets. And that's where you
can get into those.
I know, but I haven't gotten into that. I haven't bet them, but they are intriguing from, one, to your point, how sharp Vegas can be around these things.
Yeah.
But you're talking about like EPL versus the Super Bowl. You're talking about college basketball. Will three Duke players score more than is scored in the Super Bowl combined? It's a lot of fun, too, to get a full day of sports on your ledger and just being able to watch a variety of different things leading up to the Super Bowl, because obviously everything sort of shuts down Sunday night.
Some of us work on Super Bowl Sunday, Dan.
No, that's fair. That's fair. Some of us do.
Can't really watch
anything. Some of us do. That's fair.
Can't really watch anything other than the Super Bowl tomorrow.
I mean, it is radio, so you can look at something else. But nonetheless,
it's a little tough. I'm on camera, so I
oh, fair.
I'm in studio on camera, so I can't really watch too much other than the talking heads with the volume turned down.
There you go. All right. Well, nonetheless, there are some fun ones out there if you're into that sort of thing, or if you want to get a little more exposure to some of these bets and wagers just to have a little bit more fun during the day on Sunday. They are out there across sports bets, across a variety of different outcomes. So you can check those out. They're on a variety of wagering sites, and make sure, again, you're paying attention to bankroll management. You're understanding how much you can lose and how much you can deal with losing. And then, of course, we will be with you throughout the day here on FNTSY. I made mention George is going to slide in for me here at the top of this hour and take over for the final hour of Fantasy Sports Day. You got George rest of day. You have a lot of other guys checking in as well to give their takes on what is going to be happening over the course of the next 48 hours into Super Bowl 53. Mike, I think you made mention of your score before, but before I get going, what is your prediction here on what the final score is in Super Bowl 53?
I might have to sharpen up the score a little bit, but I'm thinking it's around 30-27. I need some field goals in there. 30-27 would give you 5 field goals. That might be too many. So maybe it's more like 31-27, something like that, Pats.
That is the number I had coming into the show, 31-27 Pats. I'm hoping for a Rams win, but I'm agreeing there. 31-27 final score, Patriots win their 6th Super Bowl. They now will lead the NFL in playoff victories, and Brady and Belichick, the greatest franchise of all time. The dynasty lives on. I'm going to step aside. George is going to slide in. Mike's going to take over hosting. Enjoy the rest of your day. We'll be back next weekend in full force on Fantasy Sports Today.